We continue the shiur in Gemara. Gemara says that when the main miracle took place, when the king could not sleep, Ahasuerus could not sleep, he had his diary read before him, and he decided to reward Mordechai for saving his life. And just at that moment, Haman had come to ask permission to hang Mordechai. And he was summoned before the king. The king asked him advice, what should I do to one whom I want to reward? Haman, thinking that the king meant him, felt that the one thing he himself would like that he's lacking is the luxury of feeling the royalty, experiencing royalty. So he gave the king this advice, and the king told him exactly what you said, go and do to Mordechai HaTzadik. Dress him in the king's robes, let him ride the king's horse, lead him through the city, crying before him, this is what the king does to one he wants to reward. Now this was an order by the king. A direct order by the king, if broken, is punishable by death. Haman had no alternative, he had to fulfill it. He came to Mordechai, he wanted to get through with it quickly so he could proceed with his further plan of getting Mordechai killed. He came to Mordechai, he told him, get dressed with the king's robes, get on the king's horse, because the king wants you to experience this reward. Mordechai answered, I cannot do this, I cannot disgrace the clothes of the king unless I am in proper condition, which means I must first be bathed, I must have a haircut. I cannot use the king's articles otherwise. And without that, I refuse to go. If I refuse to go, you're in trouble. So I learned how to fulfill this order. So Haman had no choice again, so he bathed, and then he went to take a haircut. Meanwhile, Esther, Queen Esther, had all the barbers shut down, so that wherever he went, there was no barber available. So he said, we have no way of getting your hair cut. Mordechai said, yes we do. You will give me a haircut. Again, Haman had no choice. He was forced to go through with it. In the middle of the haircut, he gave out a deep sigh. Haman. Mordechai asked him, why do you sigh? Haman said, a person like me who's so such a high position in the king's eyes, I have to lower myself to give a haircut and to give a rub down the bathhouse. Mordechai answered, if you are a chef, you think I don't know the fact that you were a barber for 22 years in the city of Khartoum? You're only going back to the original trade. You're just like Hitler, who was a paper hanger. 22 years a barber, this is your work, that's where you belong. Afterwards, after the haircut, Haman dressed him, and he said to him, now get up on the horse. Before we go further, though, the Gemara, the Rambam Gaon, points out, when it says that Esther, Hamalkah, closed down all the barbers, how is that possible for her to have the barbers shut down? She could not show her hand. Having the barbers shut down without reason proves that she's trying to get at Haman. She had to hide this. She had to, meanwhile, pretend she was a close friend of his. She held him in high esteem. So, how is it possible for her to close him? The answer is that she did not close them with an order by the queen. Esther HaMalkah had Ruach HaKodesh. She was a tzaddikit. She had heavenly powers too. And she just gave a heavenly order. She said a certain shem, a certain word of Kabbalah, and all the doors became shut tight. There was no way of getting into these barbershops. Literally closed these down where they could not be used at all. So therefore, Haman was forced to go to the extreme of giving the haircut himself. Now, Haman said to Mordechai, get up on the king's horse. Mordechai said, I cannot get up on the horse. I can't climb that high myself. Because I have just gone through a long period of fasting. I'm too weak. The only way I can climb up is if you bend down and I step on you, use you as a ladder, stool, then get up on the horse. The man was forced to bend down, and as he bent down, Mordechai raised his foot and kicked him in the face. This infuriated Haman. The man said to Mordechai, I know that in the Torah it says, do not rejoice over the downfall of your enemy. You're taking advantage of me now. So Mordechai answered, you fool, you're quoting from the Torah. This pasuk speaks about a Jew, not about a goy like you. On you, it's about a step to kick. What was Mordechai's reason for this? What was the prophet in kicking him, antagonizing him, baiting him this way? Mordechai's real kavanah, his real motive was, he wanted to get Haman into such a fit of rage by doing these things that Haman would lash out at him and kill him. And if he could get Haman to kill him, automatically, the king would have Haman killed, and Haman's decree against the Jews would become void. So Mordechai was anxious to sacrifice his own life, to have himself killed in order to save the Jews. This was his real motive. However, finally worked out where Mordechai got on the king's horse, and he was led through the city crying out, this is what the king does to what he wants to reward. While going, Haman passed by his own home, and on the balcony were seated Haman's daughter and wife. And as they passed, Haman's daughter figured, undoubtedly, this person sitting on the horse is her father. Person leading him must be Mordechai. So she said to her mother, we have a chance to get at our father's enemy, Mordechai. What can we do to add to his shame? She said, there is a large pan of human waste. Take that and throw it on the head of the one leading the horse. Now, the question is, the Gemara tells us this, just this one statement. Why? And what? How did this pan come about to be there? The rabbis of the Midrash tell us that Haman, when he first advised Achashverosh to kill his wife Vashti, he had a selfish motive then, because he wanted to have his daughter become the queen. That's how he would gain power. So when Achashverosh called upon, summoned all the women of the city of Shushan to appear before him in his beauty contest, Haman sent his daughter too. But before they could come before Achashverosh, they had to spend a period of time in a certain special building where they were prepared, they were beautified. Beautified, prepared to come before the king looking properly. Now, in heaven, it was a different decision entirely. And then had Hashem, you want to have your daughter become queen? You want her to look well, to find favor in the eyes of those who see her? That's what you want, but that's not the plan of heaven. So, from heaven, she was stricken with a sickness. What sickness was given her? Dysentery. That's a tropical form of diarrhea. Now, of course, we don't speak about such things generally, but the Gemara says when we speak about the Shayim, it's meant to speak about the worst things and the worst disgraceful items about them. So, this caused her to become so, to cause such disgust in the eyes of her keepers there and others, that she was literally thrown out of this place. She couldn't even reach the beginning of this contest. However, this disease remained with her, that she always had to have this pan ready. Now, when the man came by, she decided to use that pan, which was well stocked, and she threw it over on whom she thought was Mordechai, but instead proved to be Haman. Haman heard the sound, he raised his head, looked up, and was met with downpour. And of course, this caused, in addition to the pain and the suffering, it caused disgrace. As he raised his head, she recognized her father. And she was so taken aback, so shocked by it, that she jumped off the balcony and committed suicide. So, that's why the Pasuk of Megillah says that Haman returned, came home, went to his house, and there he sat down, mourning and disgraced, his head in disgrace. Mourning over the fact that his daughter had died. His head in disgrace over the shower he had just received on his head. And of course, as we mentioned previously, the reason for this was, the Gemara says, this is not just for Haman, but anybody who mocks the words of the rabbis of the Gemara has this penalty forever afterwards in Gehinnom. He is sent to a special place in Gehinnom where he is submerged, boiling the aforementioned item forever after, so that if we want to question where is Haman now, we know in what he is, what type of bath he is taking there. This is the fate of all Hamans who attack the Chachamim. Can you do calling Vecha Hashem? So should all enemies of Hashem be destroyed. Now afterwards, when Haman came to the party, after he had cleaned himself up a little, he was rushed back to the king's house, the palace, the party of Esther Malkah. And there, Esther Malkah came out with the truth. She told the king, there is someone who wants to destroy me and destroy my people. Who is it? This evil man right here. And she pointed. Now, she couldn't contain herself. She was so overwrought that she pointed, and the finger pointed to the king. Achashverosh. She would have gotten in real trouble. An angel came down and quickly pushed her finger away, pointed to Haman. She tried to go back, but the angel was strong. He kept her finger pointing to Haman. But the king did not detect this. He saw this Haman, this evil one, trying to kill my queen. He jumped up beside himself with rage. He didn't know what to do. So he ran for advice. He ran to the garden. He opened his patio doors to the garden. He came out there. In the garden, he saw his servants pulling out, uprooting his trees, his beautiful trees for the garden. So he asked them, Shemtisawi, what are you doing here? What's going on in my palace all of a sudden? Who told you to do this? So they said, we don't know. This is the orders of Haman. This, of course, was a trick, a miracle from heaven that these servants suddenly were put into the state of mind where they started to pull out trees from the garden, and into their minds came these words, Haman ordered this. So Achashverosh screamed, he's attacking me from inside and from outside. He ran back into the palace, and as he ran back, Haman had seen that his duel was certain, by now. So he reached forward, fall on his feet, on his knees, before Queen Esther to beg for mercy, to plead before him. As he leaped forward, the same angel came, this good angel, and he pushed him on top of Esther. King came back, he looked, and he said, attacking the queen in front of my eyes, this did it. If there was any chance of mercy before, this sealed a man's doom for good. So he asked, what do we do to him? One of the servants came forward, again this good angel, and said, no problem. There's a big tree, a pole set up, which Haman wanted to hang Mordechai, and let him hang on his own pole. And so Haman and his 10 sons were hung, and thus ended the threat to the Jews at that time. That's the end of all who attack Jews. Every enemy of the Jews rises to a great height, because the Gemara says anybody who attacks the Jews must become great. Why? So as not to embarrass the Jews. They shouldn't fall into the hands of very low type of people. Big great leaders, kings and so on. They become world leaders. But as high as they rise, so deep is their fall afterwards. And the end is always a fall to complete destruction. Very shortly we should be zochet to see the destruction of all the enemies of the Jews. The Gemara says that the mitzvah of learning Torah is so great, greater even than the building of the Beit HaMikdash. How important is it when Jews do not have a Beit HaMikdash, and yet the opportunity to finally build a Beit HaMikdash, and if there's a choice between going to build a Beit HaMikdash or to study Torah, the choice should be the study of Torah rather than the building of the Beit HaMikdash. The Gemara says, how do we prove this? In the case of the greatest living Jew at that time, Ezra HaSofer. Ezra HaSofer is the one who led the Jews out of Galut after the 70 years of Galut Babel, led them back to Eretz Yisrael, there to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, to build the second Beit HaMikdash. Now, he led the Jews out. They did build the second Beit HaMikdash. But Ezra himself did not go to Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because Ezra's rabbi, Baruch ben Neriah, was too old, could not make the trip, and Ezra HaSofer wanted to be close to his rabbi. He said, I must study Torah, and it's more important for me to be close to my rabbi and study Torah than it is even to partake in this great mitzvah of rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash. The Gemara says not only that, but also the study of Torah is so great that it's more important than one of the most important mitzvot in the Torah itself. The mitzvah of kibud avim, respecting a father and mother, which is so important, the mitzvah is superseded, surpassed, by the importance of studying Torah. This we find when we get to there for over 20 years. For every year he stayed away from his father, but he deprived himself of the mitzvah of serving his father, he paid for every year. He suffered by having the loss of Yosef HaTzadik, his son, be absent from his home, to think that he had died, to mourn his son for the same number of years as he had stayed away from his home. The Gemara says, though, that Yaakov Avinu had stayed away an additional 14 years when he went to the yeshiva to learn. The yeshiva of Sheva Eved. And yet, he was not punished for those 14 years, because that was not considered a sin against his parents. To leave parents to go to study Torah There is nothing wrong with it. In fact, it's a mitzvah. It's more important. You ought to study Torah and to give kavod to parents. This is where we compare both. The Bet Yosef says, Bet Yosef is the Shulchan Aruch of the Sephardim. Bet Yosef says that if the father tells his son, I don't want you to go to a certain yeshiva, not that I don't want you to study Torah, I want you to study Torah, but study Torah here, in this yeshiva. And the son says, no, father, I want to go to a different yeshiva. It's much further away, but I feel that I can succeed more. I can learn better there. And the father says, but son, I mean it for your benefit. I think you can learn just as well here, because you have our kind of rabbis here. In addition, over there, not only do you have the wrong kind of rabbis, but you also have a danger of abids, a danger of goyim. There's literally a physical danger existing. And the son says, no, father, I feel I can learn better there, and it's worth taking that risk. Now, who says it? I don't say it, I'm only quoting. The Bet Yosef says, that's the Sfardi Shulchan Aruch says, quoting that Ashba, that the law is that in this case, a son is not required to obey the father. It's not a running Torah, where he feels he can learn better, is that important that he may leave to that yeshiva against his father's will. Does this mean this gives a son a license to disobey a parent? Chas v'shalom. You will never find anywhere greater stress placed on the mitzvah of respecting a parent than you find in the Torah, in the Gemara, in the Shulchan Aruch. In that same chapter of Shulchan Aruch, Bet Yosef brings time and again the importance of this mitzvah, the great reward that lies in this mitzvah, and the horrible punishment, penalty that lies in store for one who commits the tiniest act against a parent, the tiniest one. One slight word that might be least bit disrespectful against the parent, Chas v'shalom, is considered the greatest crime, greatest sin possible. But this one case, as we find in the Mishnah, the Mishnah says, Enu dvarim she'en lahem shiur. There are mitzvot that are immeasurable. There's no way to appraise them. They are so important that a person receives reward on this world and in Gan Eden, reward in both lives. And one of them is mitzvat kibud avaim. There are a number of mitzvot like that. One of them is respect for parents. And after the Mishnah tells us about this mitzvah and others like it, these are, which are so much higher than the other mitzvot, the Mishnah finishes with one sentence. But Talmud Torah keneged kulam. Learning Torah is more important than all of those. So great is mitzvah learning Torah. Therefore, if there's a question between the two, the Gemara says that mitzvah of Talmud Torah more important than mitzvah of Kibud Avaim. The Gemara says that in learning Torah, there is Kavod Torah, the respect of Torah while learning Torah. How do we show respect to Torah? Same way we do in showing respect to a Talmid Chacham, one who is learned. But respect is shown to him when you stand up for him, which means that standing up is a sign of kavod, symbol of giving kavod. For an elderly person, for a chacham, this is the symbol of kavod. So in learning Torah too, there is also kavod Torah. The respect for Torah is so great that the Torah should be learned only standing and not sitting. Yehuda says that from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, straight through all those centuries, till the time of Rabbi Gamliel, chief rabbi of the Sanhedrin, during all those generations, people studied Torah only in a standing position as kavod for Torah. The Gemara says that when Eliel Hazakin was nistalek, when he passed away, then a sickness or a weakness came down upon the world, and people were then forced to study Torah seated. They could not stand anymore, and therefore Mishnah tells us that we are forced to make this quotation, the statement. When Rabbi Gamliel passed away, he was nistalek, then they became lost, void, the true kavod of Torah. No longer could there be seen the real kavod of Torah as had been seen until then. Because once he passed away, there was no longer the kavod of standing for Torah. If learning Torah is done in a seated position, a sitting position, you cannot detect real kavod for Torah. That's how it has remained until now. Of course, the Rebbe says that a person can concentrate better anyhow while he is sitting rather than while standing. A person has a problem, a deep problem in Torah. If he sits down and ponders this problem, he can think more deeply into it. So that a person is learning something that's light, not too deep, he can get up and walk around. If he wants to concentrate deeply and solve a problem of Torah, he sits down for the difficult items. In fact, there are some opinions that even Moshe Rabbeinu too, when he learned Torah, the easier parts were learned standing, the more difficult ones were learned sitting. This is a discussion to give it about that. In any event, the fact that there was such thing as sitting throughout the Torah came to be only after the passing of Eliel Hazakim. It's important to remember though that the word kavod Torah is shown by standing. And that's why we have the mitzvah for those who can, during the reading of Torah, kriyat Torah, for a person to stand if possible. Standing through reading Torah is the way a person shows his kavod. Just as the Jews stood at the time of Matan Torah, when the Torah was given, they stood before the mountain, Mount Sinai, no one, Chas v'Shalom, sat down. The Yehuda says that a person who prays before Hashem and says, Hashem, may your kindness and pity be showered upon the nest of a bird, this person must be silenced. He is committing a crime by saying that. Nest of a bird means, there's a mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan, person finds a bird's nest, he must send away the mother bird to keep the small ones for himself. And this, of course, is a pity on the mother bird. So a person prayed to Hashem, Hashem, please have pity on this mother bird. That tefillah is a sin. Why so? For two reasons. First place, because this will create a jealousy on the part of other animals, birds, or part of other animals, other living things, because they'll say that this means that Hashem has pity on birds, but not on animals. All were created equal, all created at the same time. So he's bringing a jealousy into the act of creation. Second rabbi says that the reason is, this reason is accepted as law. The reason is that a person is never allowed to say about the mitzvot of Hashem, the reason for the mitzvah is because of kindness and pity. The reason that Hashem said this law is because of pity. Or anything else like shechita, slaughtering an animal, kasher, a very fast death because of pity. We do not accept laws because of pity. We believe in them we carry them out because they are decrees by Hashem. This is an order by Hashem, and that's all. No reasoning behind it, because of pity, compassion, consideration. The Zvot of Hashem are Gezerot, the heavenly decrees. That's the reason and nothing else. And this is very important. An item that applies to every single case. In all cases, in all Zvot, we don't have to look too deeply for reasons. Best reason of all is, as the Gemara says here, it is a Gezerah, a decree by Hashem. That is the reason for Hashem's mitzvot. As far as we are concerned, that's a sufficient reason for us. The Gemara asks, the person owns an old Sefer Torah. Is he allowed to sell the old Sefer Torah in order to buy a new one? The old one is in danger of tearing, is in danger of having the letters erased. Yet selling a Sefer Torah is a very disrespectful act, because it cheapens it. How can you take something that's so holy and chas v'shalom dispose of it? Unless we say this is not really disposing of it, the motive is to buy a new one. The question is, until you buy a new one, meanwhile, the fact you're disposing of this is still an insult to this old Sefer Torah. Is it permissible or not? So the Gemara says, perhaps we can answer this question by a statement by Rabbi Meir. Meir said, it is forbidden ever to sell a Sefer Torah, except for two reasons. A person may go to the extent of selling a Sefer Torah only. He needs the money for the sake of learning Torah, let's say tuition. He cannot learn in a yeshiva unless he pays tuition. And if he doesn't pay tuition, he will not get a chance to learn. And he may even sell a Sefer Torah as long as this will enable him to learn, give him the opportunity to learn. Or he needs the money to get married. Instead of getting married is so great that he may even sell a Sefer Torah to raise that money. Would this then prove that since we say a person could sell a Sefer Torah to learn Torah, wouldn't this prove that he can sell a Sefer Torah to buy a new Sefer Torah? The Gemara answers, this is no proof, because learning Torah is more important than the mitzvot of the Torah. The mitzvot of the Torah is one. Learning Torah is something that will lead to obeying all mitzvot. Therefore, this is greater. Also, this way of getting married is so great because this means the perpetuation of mankind. This world would cease to exist if there were no marriages. There'd be no study of Torah, there'd be no Torah at all. So therefore this mitzvah is so great that in this case only a person may sell a Sefer Torah in order to get married. But to exchange one Sefer Torah for the other, if you don't have something more important gained by it, it would not be permissible. The Gemara says now, a person may not sell a Sefer Torah even though he doesn't need it, meaning even though he has two of them, he has doubles. It's forbidden to sell a double of a Sefer Torah. And Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, even if he doesn't have what to eat and he sells a Sefer Torah to buy food, that money that he receives from this sale will never bring him luck. You'll never see any bracha in that money. Here we spoke about selling a Sefer Torah, which is a double thing. He has two of them. We find the Shulchan Aruch brought from the Rizal that a person who has not two Sefer Torahs, but two Seferim, so he has a double in a Gemara, double in a Zohar Kadosh, and he sells one, that person is called a behemah, an animal. Why? Because we find a pasuk in the Torah by mitzvah of bikurim, and a person brings the first comes to the Beit HaMikdash, he says, Bi'arti HaKodesh Min HaBayit, I have cleaned out the holy things of my house, referring, of course, to the fruit. But here these all bring that this is a them is a hit. This person says he has a sefer which is kodesh, holy. The anti kodesh min abayit. Has it? He sold it. He got rid of it. He cleaned out this sefer kodesh from the bayit, the house. The first letters of those four words, be arti hakodesh min habayit, is behema. So anybody clears out the sefer kodesh from his house is called a behema. This is what is written in the Shulchan Aruch as actual law. A person should not sell doubles in Sefarim. The Yehudah says that the students of Rabbi Zakkai asked him once, could you tell us the secret of your longevity? And he replied, yes. What is the secret of your long life? How come you lived so long? What's the chut that you have to live such an old age? He said, I'll reveal it to you. There are certain mitzvot which bless a person with long life. The fact that I never called my friend by a different name than his own. The Yehudah tells us, of course, that one who calls his friend by a bad name, bad nickname, that person has committed so great a sin, as for sure he goes down to Gehinom and doesn't come back. This is the Yehudah says in Bava Metzia. Here we're speaking about, he said, I never called my friend by a nickname, even if the nickname was not a bad name at all. Because even that is wrong. Never to give your friend a nickname of any kind. Secondly, I never in my life missed saying kiddush over wine. There are some who find an excuse, say kiddush over something else, over bread, other ways to circumvent it. He said, I never missed kiddush over wine. In fact, I had an old mother where one time I did not have wine for kiddush. I had no money to buy this wine. My mother took her kerchief from her head, sold it, and brought me wine for Kiddush. So I should not miss even one time in my life. When she passed away, his mother, she left him an inheritance of 300 barrels of wine. This was a blessing for her. The fact that one, the Yemenah says that one who is careful about Kiddush for Shabbat, and he is blessed, his barrels are filled, his coffers are filled. He gets a special downpour from heaven of Shefa and Berecha. The Yehudah says he is the one who was so careful with Kiddush. And that means Zakkai passed away. The Yehudah tells us he left an inheritance for his children, 3,000 barrels of wine. That's how he was repaid for this mitzvah. Yehudah says that Rav Huna, who was a student of Rav, once came before Rav, and he was wearing a belt made of some type of grass. In other words, he did not have his own cloth belt. And Rav asked him, what's this? What's the meaning of this? How do you come dressed with a grass belt? So he said, I did not have wine for Kiddush. I was forced to pawn my belt in order to buy the Kiddush, the wine. Rav said, in that case, I give you a beracha. May you be flooded with clothing. You pawned part of your clothing. May you be covered, smothered with clothing. You should have so much. Words were maybe smothered, covered with clothing. Sometime later, there was a wedding. Rav Huna made a wedding, this same Rav Huna made a wedding for his son. Avona was very short in height. And in his house, as the guests came in, he was lying on his bed, resting before the wedding. He was so short that his family did not see him lying on the bed. They all came with their coats, but not noticing who was on the bed, they removed their coats and placed them on the bed. And he was buried in this pile of clothes. One rabbi came and saw him beneath his pile of clothes. So he said to him, "Look at this. The Rav's beracha came true." He said, "You should be smothered, covered with clothes." And word of this came back to Rav. When I came to Rav, Rav was very angry with him. And he said to him, "When I gave you this beracha, blessing you should have so much clothes, so much wealth, why didn't you say to me, as one should upon receiving a blessing, v'chein lamar, meaning the same to you? When you receive a blessing with someone, good wishes, you always say the same to you. Now, I gave you this blessing with well meant. It came true in this manner. In your case, it came true with sort of a play on words where you were covered with clothes. It wasn't your own. These clothes were not yours, so it wasn't actually a blessing of wealth, but the words did come true. Who knows, if you would have said to me the same to you, I might have gotten the blessing too, but in a different form. I might have gotten it in real. In actuality, where I would have gotten a lot of wealth from this. But you should have replied the same to you when I gave you this blessing." He says too that Rabbi Preda's students asked Rabbi Preda, "What was the reason for your long life? How come you lived so long?" The Preda answered them, "First, I never let another person precede me to the yeshiva. I was always the first one in the yeshiva. And I never said a beracha before a kohen. Whenever there was berachot to be said at the table, if there was a kohen there, I let the kohen have the kavod to say the beracha first." This was Rabbi Preda. The Gemara asks, how could Rabbi Preda make a statement like that? Is this a mitzvah to let a kohen say a beracha first? Fact is, the Gemara says that any Tamid Chacham who allows a kohen, even a kohen gadol, if he is an Am Haaretz, not like this Chacham, if he allows him to say a beracha before him, the penalty for that chacham is death, because he has disgraced the honor of Torah. The honor of Torah comes before even the Tamid Chacham. How could Rabbi Preda have said, "I did it long because I did this mitzvah of never saying a beracha before"? I hope he does the Imam Lachamu is. First, this was the reason of my living so long a life. Even that says that the student said, asked him, "What gave you long life?" And he replied to them, "Because I never embarrassed any of my friends. I never went to bed at night without first forgiving anybody who had hurt my feelings or insulted me in any way. And third, I was always a sport with my money. The question of a difference of a few pennies, I let it go. I forfeited it. It was always a sport when it came to small items." The Yunus says that not going to bed without forgiving is the same as one rabbi in the Gemara. Each time he went to bed, he said, "Shalele dechoma nitzaran. Before I go to bed, I declare emphatically, I hereby forgive mochel anybody who has caused me any type of pain or suffering." And the case of a veteran being a sport with his money, even that says that Eov, who was so wealthy, so great a tzaddik and so wealthy, was known for this fact, that if he ever bought something, and there was a question of splitting a difference of any kind, he would forego his. He would say to the storekeeper, to the shopkeeper, you keep the difference. It doesn't matter. The question of an item that cost 39 and a half cents, who gets the half cent? He would say, I forego mine, you can keep it. Or anything in that respect, even on a larger scale. Any doubt of any kind, Eov would always say, I'll take the loss as a sport. And this was considered so great in its feather. These are the items which lead to long life. These items that lead to purity in character. Purity in character leads to religion and kedusha. Through kedusha, a person can be zocher to see the geula, which we all hope to see. Bezrat Hashem, v'hera b'yameinu, v'yas Mashiach tikenu, v'yam bet mikdash.